A Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke says that the U.S. Central Bank is ready to respond as necessary to a surge in global commodity prices caused in part by the unrest in the Middle East, though he said inflation expectations still remain low. My, oh, my, what will happen? Up next, we'll be talking with Webster Tarpley about surviving the cataclysm. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. Webster Griffin Tarpley is a leading political thinker in our current age, a political activist historian living near Washington, D.C. As an activist historian, he's best known for his book, George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography. He is a 9/11 truth scholar, activist, and decades-long expert on international terrorism. My pleasure to introduce Webster Tarpley to Coast to Coast. Webster, how are you?
Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure. Well, last week or so, Donald Rumsfeld, former Secretary of Defense, when asked by a radio host, my friend Mankow, what about Building 7? How could it go down the way it did? He said, what's Building 7? I can't believe it, Webster. I can't believe it.
Oh. Well, concerning that, I mean, the key to that whole thing are the 25-plus drills that were either going on 9/11 in advanced preparation or recently completed. And I have argued in a book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, as well as in a couple of articles, some of them published in Europe, that if you look at the 25-plus drills, you'll see that every aspect of 9/11 is essentially covered by one of those drills. In other words, it was produced by somebody taking the drill live. It's a very interesting concept. If you remember seeing this movie with Tom Cruise about the plot to kill Hitler, Operation Valkyrie?
Right.
Remember this very dramatic scene where Stauffenberg rewrites this emergency plan, Operation Valkyrie, and instead of making it a plan to keep Hitler in power, he rewrites it with small changes as a plan to get Hitler out of power.
Out of power.
And then he takes it and he gets Hitler to sign it. Remember this interesting
scene?
I did,
yep.
This is the key to how these things are done. What they obviously did was they took a bunch of drills, they rewrote them, they redirected them, and then they took them live. They flipped them live in the usual parlance. And you can see this repeatedly. The Kennedy assassination is bootlegged through Operation Mongoose, redirected from Castro to Kennedy. You can see it with Abel Archer, 83 or 84, was it, when the Soviets thought that drill was about to go live, nuclear war, they also matched it then with their own red alert. So it's a well-established technique. And I'm afraid that if you don't look at it from the point of view of these drills, you miss the actual mechanism that created the events you saw.
You know, Webster, also, and this is not the expertise here we're talking about in this program with you tonight, but I do want to tap your brain. Tomorrow, Sirhan Sirhan comes up for parole, the convicted assassin of Robert F. Kennedy. And there's no question in my mind he was there, that he was one of the shooters, because Rosie Grier, who tackled him, saw him with the gun there. But I'm convinced that there was another shooter there.
I believe that the statistics are that there were 10 shots fired, and the gun that Sirhan Sirhan had only eight rounds or something like that.
13 shots, 8 rounds.
Yeah, something like that. So, of course, most of these things are false flag events. And if you look at this book of mine, I've got a whole theory, the moles, the patsies, the technicians, what is the division of labor, how they create this kind of optical illusion, which is the false flag terror event.
They get people like the Sirhan Sirhans, and whether he was hypnotized or not, I do not know. They get the Lee Harvey Oswalds. They get them there. They might not know why they're there in Oswald's case. I mean, he always contended he was a patsy.
Yes.
And then while they're there, the whole scheme is going on around them, and they don't even know what's happening, do they?
Yeah, it's the difference between the patsy, of course, the patsy or the Oswald is the fanatic, the dupe, the double agent, the psychotic, the hapless person who might be there confused. They are not capable of creating the effects you see. This also goes for Atta, the so-called 9/11 hijackers, and so forth. But then you've got in the background a group of moles, that is, government officials who are loyal to this sinister Wall Street-controlled network inside the federal government, which has been there for 125 years or thereabouts. And this entity, this secret government rogue network, has its own policies, and that's often war when the official government might want peace. So they conduit these things through the various government agencies. Then there's also the question of the technicians. The technicians being the people who can indeed create the effects that you see. And they're the ones who actually do these things. So in the case of Sirhan Sirhan, he's a patsy there. He's got the ethnic characteristics that they wanted to take the fall, to be demonized, to target some group. But then there's likely to have been some technician, that is some super highly trained marksman or something like this, in some nook of this room. Very, very hard to say.
You know, this planet, Webster, is going through all kinds of things right now. We're going through this economic mess. We're going through these bizarre uprisings in the Middle East. We're going through wars. We're going through famine. And we're going through this push for a new world order all at the same time. I don't believe in coincidences. This is planned.
Certainly not. Maybe we could start with the destabilization wave in the Middle East, because I think this is probably the most timely thing, and it's in some ways the most dangerous. Would that be all right?
Yeah, let's.
All right, then. Right now, the news, I've got Al Jazeera here in my house in Maryland, right near Washington, D.C., and they're reporting that Gaddafi has now successfully recaptured two cities, and he's attacking several other cities, so that it's likely that you're going to have a prolonged civil war in Libya. Now, if Gaddafi starts winning, or I might even say if he keeps winning, that may be the situation now already, we could be a week or two away from a new Iraq war. And this time it will be done not by the growling imperialist ogres Bush and Cheney. This will now be done under left cover for human rights by the smiling, genial, telegenic Obama, with almost no resistance from the U.S. population. But the possibilities with Gaddafi, of course, this will make four wars. We'll have the Iraq war still going on, in spite of what they say, the Afghan war going on. We have, like it or not, a war with Pakistan going on right now. And then you add in Libya. This could get to be a tremendous situation of overstretch. Right now, the debate is there going to be a no-fly zone, right? The same thing that the U.S. did to Iraq at the end of the first Gulf War. And you can just see in the last 24 hours, the U.S. Senate wants a no-fly zone. Hillary Clinton, always a warmonger out of her tremendous psychological weakness, she wants a no-fly zone. The British government, this is really the big one. Prime Minister Cameron is got foaming at his mouth with his demands to prepare an attack on Libya. Obviously, it's going to be led by the U.S. So he's ready to fight to the last American, as usual. And this could now go very, very quickly. And I think you have to see the context of this, why you've got this wave of destabilizations, coups, putches, right, when a bunch of generals get together and take over the government of a country. It seems to me quite clear that this is a policy of the U.S. intelligence community, the British intelligence community, and it's also taken over then by Obama and by Cameron.
Now, the leaders, though, of these Middle Eastern countries, these guys weren't Boy Scouts.
No, but this is not the cause. In other words, this doesn't really enter into it one way or another. In other words, they were supported for reasons that had nothing to do with human rights or democracy or anything.
Right.
And they're now being overthrown for reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with human rights or democracy. The methods being used are those of the color revolution, the CIA people power coup, the postmodern coup. And interestingly, I had written about this. I put out a book just about 3 years ago right now, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, which you can get through my website, tarpley.net. And if people are interested in seeing this sort of, you know, as a motion picture, there are these movies that Alex Jones made interviewing me, Fall of the Republic and Obama Deception. Mm-hmm. These are at Infowars.com. The idea is that with the neocons, Bush and Cheney, their method was direct military aggression. You show a neocon a country, he'll say, bomb it, invade it. These are, you know, one-trick ponies, military aggression is all they know. Now you have something much more sophisticated. This is now this Zbigniew Brzezinski soft power school. We've got Samantha Power sitting in the White House, who superintends part of these things. We've got the National Endowment for Democracy. We've got the International Republican Institute, the National Democratic Institute, Freedom House. We've got a guy called Gene Sharp, who's not very well known, but should be, the Albert Einstein Foundation. And what they've developed is a kind of technology of destabilization, which involves things like having a color, having a slogan, having a telegenic orator, using an election, right? Having a poll that says you won the election and the dictator lost.
Understanding the internet.
Right. And all of this, these are essentially the techniques that came out of the overthrow of the Shah, when Brzezinski and Carter overthrew the Shah quite deliberately and quite deliberately brought in Khomeini, because Brzezinski wanted Islamic fundamentalism as a bulwark against Soviet communism.
But they turned on us.
Yes. Well, of course, but Brzezinski would say it was all worth it because the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan destroyed the Soviet Union, and that was really the task. So it was all more than worth it. And in other words, you're ahead at the end of the game, because if the Soviets are gone, then you have world domination, quite apart from anything that Iran does or does not do. Later on with Marcos in the Philippines. And then, of course, the other big one is the Velvet Revolutions, right? The fall of the communist regimes in 1989. Later on, these methods have been brought back. You could say that the Obama campaign of 2007-2008 was in many ways a color revolution brought home to the U.S. But now with what you just mentioned, with the internet, with Google, with at least the beginnings of Facebook and Twitter and the rest of this, and that method has now been re-exported. They tried this in Iran in the summer of 2009. It did not work. But now they have brought it back with a vengeance into the Arab world, and it's working to some extent.
To some extent. I don't think they anticipated Gaddafi to fight it out as much as he has.
Right. Gaddafi is someone they've been trying to kill for years.
Right.
You may remember
Reagan almost got him.
Bombing.
Yeah.
But there's also another very interesting story, the David Shaler affair. David Shaler is a guy who was a member of MI5, the British counterintelligence, like the FBI, and he was sitting in his office in London, and he noticed that his counterpart at MI6 was attempting to assassinate Gaddafi. And how they did it was they brought in Al-Qaeda, or a group calling itself Al-Qaeda, and gave them 100,000 British pounds to put some bombs around Gaddafi. And this was done. The bombs went off. Gaddafi escaped, but a bunch of civilians were killed. And Shaler then went public with this, and he was thrown in jail. He had violated the Official Secrets Act. He was persecuted and, I think, driven really to insanity, quite frankly. But the fact is that this was in 1995. And the scenario then, I think, is the same one we have now. It was to eliminate Gaddafi, start a civil war, accuse al-Qaeda of being one of the sides, and then invade. Because you've got these oil.
Well, and as you speak, we've got a couple naval ships in the area. And they are seriously contemplating sending our jets into Libya to do some tactical hits.
Exactly. And I think this would be a disaster for the United States. It's a kind of a last gasp of imperialism. We could go through Mubarak and quite a few others, but maybe the why of this, I think, is what interests many.
Yeah, because first of all, you know, I've not been a supporter of Gaddafi. He was one of the ultimate terrorists. You know, he took down planes. He created all kinds of things. Yet we allowed this clown to stay in office for so long. So get into the why, Webster.
I would just have to say first, the Lockerbie story, I think at the time there was more evidence against Syria than there was against Gaddafi, but the U.S. didn't want to take that seriously. The La Belle Discothèque of 1986 was done by the investigation was done by a very corrupt German police official who's still around in some form. I don't think that one is proved either. You have to look at Gaddafi and say, if you can survive for 42 years in that kind of an atmosphere, you are a pretty tough cookie, and you're actually pretty smart.
You
right?
Gotta be.
He is. But now, what is the why? I would say that the general reason for this is now kind of a worldwide campaign, And it's a flight forward. It's an orgy of destabilization. It's a wild rampage of coups and flailing, you know, lashing out in all directions against all of these countries by the U.S. and the British primarily. And I think the issue is the U.S. empire in the Middle East is in the process of collapsing. And the form that this takes is some countries are playing the Russia card. Some countries are playing the China card. Mm-hmm. Some countries are playing the Iran card. And the U.S.-British answer to that is destabilize all of them, paralyze them, if necessary, break them into parts, right? Sudan has been broken.
It's easier for us to control that way.
Right. The smaller, it's the empire, is the overarching thing is the empire with the International Monetary Fund. And then instead of having nation states that can defend themselves to some extent, you've got a bunch of petty, a checkerboard, a crazy quilt of petty, impotent, squabbling states. Sudan has just been carved into two parts.
Yeah.
Libya
yeah.
is in the process of being carved into two parts, as far as we can
sure.
see.
Is the goal...
Yemen, same story, two parts.
Is the goal still Iran?
Yes, although the goal, of course, is when you listen to the crazier supporters of this wave of coups, they will tell you, we have now got the attention of the youth generation in the Arab world. We've got about 180 to 200 million college-educated, unemployed youth who don't believe in anything. They hate their governments, but they hate the Islamists and they hate the opposition. I would call them nihilists because I think that's what they are.
Do they hate us too?
Well, no. This is the one thing is that they probably think Hollywood is cool and Google is cool and Twitter is cool. So
yeah.
they're cosmopolitan and pro-Western in that cultural
okay,
way.
Okay, interesting.
Look, in terms of who's doing what, let's see. Who's playing the Russian card right now? Well, Saudi Arabia has a faction around Prince Bandar. And back in 2008, there was a big flap about how Bandar, who was thought to be the most pro-U.S., right? This is Bandar Bush, the guy who was in Washington for so many years. He was in favor of essentially playing the Russian card, using Russia to balance the U.S. and keeping the place independent. Another example is Karzai in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. He has played the China card, but he's playing the Russian card most recently. He took right. a visit to Moscow. The U.S. freaked out over that.
Well, he was our guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's what's ironic, is if you can't control Karzai when you're militarily occupying the country, this points to this tremendous weakness in the U.S. imperialist model, because the U.S. domination is unbearable, because what it comes down to is no economic development is offered. You're forced under the conditionalities of the International Monetary Fund and the World Trade Organization. You don't get anything for this, and at the same time, you've got people like these charming ladies, Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice, are sticking their noses into your internal affairs and telling you that you're a dictator and you're an oppressor, whereas with the Chinese, you get a real deal, you get real economic development, and they couldn't care less about your domestic stuff. Here, another country that's playing the Russian card, Italy. This is really important because this reaches into Western Europe with one of the big countries. There is a kind of axis between Putin in Russia and Berlusconi of Italy. And it's probably not well known. But if you look at these countries like Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, Bahrain, Algeria, right, the ones that are under the gun right now, Italy is too. Berlusconi is the target of a kind of creeping coup by the it comes down to a communist president of Italy, Napolitano.
Let's come right back, Webster. We'll talk about that because you're right. They're going after him, too. We'll be back in a moment. Well, you can become a Coast Insider, a Streamlink member, for just 25 cents a day by going to coasttocoastam.com and signing up for that, getting special downloads, podcasting, and things like that. And we're going to be putting in a video chat there for you in the coming few weeks. We'll be trying that out. Keep our fingers crossed. And I think you'll enjoy that. When we come back, more with Webster Tarpley. And we're going to get into the CIA's involvement in this one world push a little bit later on Coast to Coast AM. And Webster, we've already seen what's happening to the price of oil with just what's been happening in Libya lately. I guess that could go even higher, can it?
Yes, and this is a benefit for Wall Street because that is an artificial demand for dollars. Now, we've had the Federal Reserve put out, what, $3.3 trillion of emergency credit to the zombie banks and the various hedge fund hyenas in Wall Street, and the Treasury about $700 billion with this TARP. So there's a lot of dollars sloshing around the world. Now, with QE2 from Bernanke, there's another $600 billion. So there's a lot of dollar liquidity that tends to drive the dollar down. There's always an impulse towards a dollar collapse unless they do something about it. So one of the things they've done is start this wave of destabilizations with the idea that if you can destabilize Libya, that's already 2% of the world oil. And Libya is also absolutely critical for various places in Europe. And if you look at I have this interesting breakdown here. Italy gets 22% of their oil from Libya. France gets 16%. Germany, the heart of the whole economy, 8%. Austria, 21%. So Europe is generally between 10-15% from Libya. The U.S. is 0.5%. So if the Libyan oil is shut down, right, if Gaddafi burns the wells the way Saddam Hussein did, That's a knockout blow for Europe,
right?
Which is, from the point of view of these CIA characters, that's good, and the U.S. is basically untouched. There's also some pretty serious damage for China. They would lose about 3%, which would be significant in price terms. So, yes, that's another added benefit. But we were talking about Berlusconi. This is very little understood.
He's under fire out there, isn't he?
He has been indicted 30 times now in the past couple of years by some out of control judges in Milan, magistrates, so called. And these people are obviously working for the intelligence agencies of the U.S.
And he's been indicted on all kinds of things, right?
All kinds of things. And they sent in a sex operative at one point, a prostitute, and you can hear the tapes.
He took the bait.
Oh, yes, of course. But there's a grown woman. There's nothing illegal about this.
Right.
She's a professional. And he says to her, darling, I'm going to take a shower. Wait for me in Putin's bed. And Putin's bed means, and you can hear this on these tapes that she made, it means that Putin is his personal friend and had given him an antique four-poster Russian wooden bed. So this gets right to the heart of the matter. The Russian-Italy alliance yields this thing called the South Stream pipeline, which is a way you can get gas from Russia into Central Europe, so everybody can have it, and you don't go through these virulently anti-Russian countries in Eastern Europe. So you could say that Italy is playing the Russian card. Berlusconi is also playing the Libya card. I mean, the economic ties between Italy and Libya are extremely close. Italy is the former colonial power. If Libya goes down, the biggest immediate loser is Italy. There's also something similar happening in Northern Europe. There's now the Nord Stream pipeline, which also goes from Russia. It goes down the bottom of the Baltic Sea, and it gets into Germany, so it does not go through the Baltic states or Poland or Ukraine or any of these other countries that have a history of, you know, quarreling with Russia over the gas, the price of gas, the tolls that are paid, and so forth. So you could say that Germany and Italy more so, but Germany to a certain extent, have played the Russian card, and the U.S. did not want any of this. The U.S. approach to this was always to block it. So a lot of people playing the Russian card. How about if we look at who's playing the China card? Well, Karzai was one of the first in Afghanistan. You may remember a little bit less than a year ago, Obama made an emergency trip out of the clear blue sky. He ran to Kabul to have a meeting with Karzai.
Right.
This was because Karzai had gone to Beijing and signed all kinds of economic development deals, exactly the kind of thing that the U.S. either cannot or will not do anymore. Libya has... there are about 30,000 Chinese workers in Libya, and they're in the process of being kicked out. And this is one of the things that that the U.S. Is interested in doing. One of the main goals of U.S. foreign policy these days is to kick the Chinese out of Africa, deny the Chinese the oil, the strategic raw materials, say, in a place like Zimbabwe.
Why are we pushing them?
It is because the U.S. economy is now so weak and so far gone and so financialized and so looted by Wall Street that we simply cannot compete in what used to be our strong suit, which was industrial capitalism, heavy industry, development investments, engineering, right, building dams, railroads, power stations, rural electrification, agriculture, all of these things. The U.S. is now essentially a country that has lots of derivatives, lots of paper speculation, but nothing much to offer in these other terms. And this is really the crisis. This is why you've got so little to offer these countries.
We've got the one thing they don't have, the military.
Yeah, but now even this, if you look at the Israelis invading Lebanon in 2006, they took it on the chin.
It didn't work this time.
One armored division. And so that was one of the reasons the Brzezinski people, this big new Brzezinski faction, made this big comeback with Obama. In other words, the general idea of this book that I mentioned before, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, from 3 years ago, is Obama is the new Carter, and Brzezinski was there and is there, and now there are some younger clones of Brzezinski who can do the work under Obama. And the idea is subversion, right? You overthrow countries talking about human rights and so forth. You do these color revolutions, as they're now called, and that allows you to do all this very cheaply. One of the things Obama will do, I'm sure now, is he can go to Wall Street and say, look, guys, stupid Bush and Cheney insisted on invading and bombing Afghanistan and Iraq, and look what it cost you, trillions of dollars, hated around the world, isolated, alliances in a shambles. With me, I can get you European troops and European money because I do it under left cover. I do it with humanitarian stories being told and mm-hmm. Anti-tyranny and all the rest of these things. But in reality, the goal is get the Chinese out of Africa. This dividing of Sudan, right? One of the goals there is kick the Chinese out of southern Sudan because that's where they're getting significant oil.
Well, if this is the goal, are they doing it brilliantly?
I think the problem with their strategy is it's very fragile now. In other words, all it takes is one failed color revolution, and that whole model goes into crisis. And really, the so-called Twitter revolution in Iran back in June of 2009, that's already a failure.
That did not work.
It fizzled.
Yeah.
And now that added to desperation. In other words, there's a very interesting website in Moscow. It's run by a guy that I've actually met, General Ivashov, the former head of the Russian general staff. And one of their articles, this is called the Institute for Strategic Culture. It's a think tank in Moscow. They say that Obama began getting reports about the destabilization of Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, Algeria, Saudi Arabia, and so forth in the autumn of 2009. That would be right after the failed coup in Iran, which didn't take off. And that all during 2010, what you see now was being avidly prepared by, the entire State Department, CIA, NSA, the whole community, right? The entire resources of the U.S. Government. Just a couple of other ones would be who's playing the Iran card, because this is also very, very relevant. Or maybe actually before that, we focus for a second on Pakistan. This is a really big, important country, right? This is 2.5 times the size of Iran. It's 180,000.
They've got nukes.
Nuclear weapons, huge place. What have they been doing? Well, we just had the meeting of the Sino-Pakistan Defense Board just last week. 2011 has been declared the China-Pakistan Friendship Year. The idea is you can read all kinds of editorials in publications like the Pakistan Observer, where they say it's time to switch alliances, dump the U.S., get them out of here. They're killing our people with these drones. They're carrying out assassinations. Right? The word is if you get a wedding invitation in northwest Pakistan, you better not go.
Don't go.
They're going to come and blow you up. And they do this deliberately because the goal is to foment a rebellion inside Pakistan of these tribal areas against the central government. And with the U.S., is the U.S. does the killing, but the central government in Islamabad is blamed. So they're trying to export the war from Afghanistan into Pakistan. The idea is that people in Pakistan say, we've had enough of this. Let's go with the Chinese. They're our natural allies. They're rivals of India. We're not going to be shot to pieces every day by the Chinese. And this gets us to this case, this guy, Ray Davis. Right? This is now the so-called U.S. diplomat, I think quite obviously a CIA official, who has been arrested by the Pakistanis and is now being held. And Hillary Clinton has been screaming about this, that he's got to be freed immediately. Well, again, in these publications like Pakistan Observer, they're telling us that he is a terrorist controller, that he is out there, not acting as a diplomat, but he's organizing terrorist events that can be used to discredit and destabilize the Pakistan government. And not just any kind of terror events, but a dirty bomb. In other words, a nuclear dirty bomb using conventional explosives wrapped up in some kind of radioactive waste or something like this. Now, if you think of that, right, suppose he had succeeded. Suppose the story is true, which I can't really tell.
Well, and what was he even doing there in the first place?
Well, the Pakistanis have been forced with all this, talk about terrorism, global war on terror and so forth. They have been blackmailed back and forth with these, the Times Square bomber. They were blamed for this. They're blamed for all of these things. And every time one of these events takes place, the blackmail on Pakistan increases, and they're told, you've got to accept more, essentially, U.S. Embassy employees who are fairly obviously from the CIA or from some military contractor. So imagine, think of the scope that the U.S. intelligence community is trying to give to this wave of destabilizations. If you imagine that one of the components that was planned in, or may have been planned in, was a radiological dirty bomb in Pakistan, leading then to the U.S. saying, aha, those Pakistani nukes are not under control. We're going to seize them. This is what protects the Pakistanis. You can't invade Pakistan because they have nuclear deterrence. If you do, you may get an atomic bomb on your head. So that's pretty good deterrence. So they have to find a way to attack Pakistan, which is a natural ally of China. You know, if you look at the map, if you want to get oil from Iran to China, and this is a huge issue for the Chinese, you don't want to go by water because it's 12,000 miles and the U.S. and the British dominate the ocean.
Right.
You could build a pipeline from Iran, and then you go up Pakistan, you cross the Himalayas above India, and you're in China. And that would solve the biggest single strategic weakness that the Chinese have, is they don't have a guaranteed overland source of oil. So that's one of the reasons. There's also this port of Gwadar in southern...
Well, where is all this headed, Webster? Where's this taking us as a nation?
I think this is, as you were saying before, this is somehow... It's an exercise of shock and awe, but it's not the shock and awe of bombing. It's the shock and awe of a hammering series of astounding events, right? As you were saying, it just doesn't end. Just a couple of other ones in Lebanon. The U.S. was too weak to prevent Hezbollah from essentially nominating their own government there. Or how about Iraq? In Iraq, the U.S. wanted the puppet Alawi to become the prime minister, and were incapable of imposing Alawi as the prime minister. Instead, the prime minister remains Maliki, who is notoriously a friend of the Iranians. What else can we say? Turkey. Turkey is a country now that wants to be independent. They're saying maybe the best thing for many of these places is to go back under the Ottoman Empire. I don't think that's a good idea, but people in Turkey say so. The Turks came forward and tried to mediate the situation with Iran, right? The nuclear stuff, that's almost a year ago mm-hmm. now. So you can see a lot of these countries are playing the Iranian card. And maybe I should focus on Egypt, because this was so dramatic. what was Mubarak's great original sin? Right? What did he do that was so terrible? Well, one of the things he did was last October, with Hillary Clinton screeching around the world that you had to cut all relations with Iran, no banking, no trade, no nothing, sanctions, Mubarak opened direct flights from Cairo to Tehran and back. It was sort of a slap in the face of the
right.
U.S.
Right.
And this was not the first thing that he had done. In 2009, when Obama came in, the big idea was, let's build a front of Arab Sunni countries. That would be Egypt, it would be Saudi Arabia, it would be the Emirates out in the Gulf. And let's ally them with Israel, and let's put U.S. military bases in these countries, and then let's play that against Iran, Syria, Hezbollah, Hamas, and the so-called radicals, right, the rejection front. And then let's dominate the region using these two fronts. Now, according to reports from the Egyptian press, Mubarak was the first guy to say no. Mubarak has never allowed U.S. bases, or he never allowed U.S. bases in Egypt. They're not there now, and they may be coming there now, but he never let them in. And he said, if you want to put me under the U.S. nuclear umbrella, that's going to require U.S. Air Force bases here. I don't want them. I will not allow them. And therefore, he essentially sabotaged the main strategic idea that the U.S. Had. U.S. wanted troops for Iraq from Mubarak. The answer was no. The U.S. wanted troops for Afghanistan. Answer was no. So this guy was not a puppet. This was somebody who had acquired, you know, he was an entrenched authoritarian figure, to be sure. But he had acquired a lot of autonomy. In other words, this was a guy who could say no.
He was getting too big for his britches?
Right, he's not the only one. You look at Bahrain, right, this island out there in the Persian or Iranian, Arabian Gulf, whichever you want to call it. Bahrain is the base of the 5th U.S. fleet. So this is the question of, you know, the Straits of Hormuz and this tremendous oil artery of the world. The royal family of Bahrain had said to the U.S., we forbid you. We will not allow you to use our base for any attack on Iran. So you look at this panorama, and you look at all these places, right, be it Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, Lebanon, Italy, Germany even, Turkey, you know, each one in its own way, all of them striving to get out from under this unipolar U.S. domination, and the world essentially becoming multipolar again, and the U.S. absolutely freaking out and saying, well, if that's what it's going to be, we're going to bring down all these countries like 10 pins, right? We're just like bowling pins, right? We're just going to knock them all off.
Start all over.
But, and again, the main weapon they have, because of the military overstretch, because of the bankruptcy and the isolation and the hatred and the weakness, the main thing they have to work with is the color revolution. It's got to be the postmodern coup. And if it keeps failing, as it failed in Iran, and it worked in Egypt, I guess.
Worked in Tunisia. It worked in Egypt.
But look, here's the way this stuff works. The color revolution is essentially a show in the foreground. In other words, you have a bunch of walk-on parts. You have a bunch of extras who come in.
Hold on for a second, Webster. We're going to hit this break, and then we're going to come back. We'll talk more about this. And also, I want to get into WikiLeaks and Julian Assange and get your take on that and how involved he might be with the CIA, of all things. We'll be back.